Spend probably about 20 minutes going through what I think the highlights that we've been up to and some of the challenges that we face and what we see for the future. And when I'm finished, Jamie will take over and Jamie will spend about 15 minutes talking about the nitty-gritty or the money we plan to spend the money for next year. But first, I want to thank, it's the last year, there's so many people to thank because we were in a position that we didn't know whether we'd keep the doors open or not, but there are individuals such as our trustees. Never once did they say cut, did they say change, they supported everything we did 100%. The foundation not only supported us, but they gave us additional funds to cover expenses that we didn't think we'd cover. So truly, reaching out to them and what they've done for us is remarkable. And you guys have been incredible. My colleagues, the 30 other community colleges, and what we meet once a week during this pandemic, and the conversation always starts with how much is your county going to deduct from you this year? And it was up to 50%. And never once did anyone reach out to me and say, hey, be prepared, this might happen. You guys never once said that. From Pat Ryan to everyone in this room, Jim, we meet with Jim's committee once a month. It was like, what can we do to move forward? So thank you. It was very special. And if you should have seen our staff and our faculty, you take an instructor who's been doing the same thing for 30 years in the classroom and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, next week, everything has to be online. And they did it, which I'm still shocked. And they did it pretty well, too, by the time. Yeah, this year, in the spring, unbelievable. To the point that our students are beginning to prefer that. Not all of them, but there are some that when we put the schedule out, we had a few of these classes, they filled up first. So it kind of tells you something, the new generation. Here's some photos of what we were able to do on campus. We did bring students back, socially distanced, and some things we had to have, labs, some music, some art, and it went really well. So we were pleased with what we were able to accomplish. And with our budget this year, this is nice. We are one of the few community colleges that say no increase in the tuition. We had no layoffs. We're not asking for any additional money. And we do project about 9% of the reduction, but we balanced our budget with all these requests. And Jamie can talk about some of the things she did. We just switched IT services, and Jamie says, it's remarkable what you can do when you dig into a contract. She saved us $700,000 by reorganizing our IT department, and it's better now than it was before. So thank you, Jamie. I appreciate that. We put together a little short video. It's about 3 minutes, but it's kind of shows some of the highlights that we've had during the year. So I'll show that, then I'll talk a little bit more about what you've seen in the video.
It's been a year we'll never forget. However, through our united courage and determination, we've come back, returning to lives that are more cherished and committed than ever before. Welcome back to SUNY Ulster.
We could not be more pleased with everything at SUNY Ulster, the staff, the faculty, the student body. Everyone's really geared towards helping the students succeed.
The faculty is just very dedicated and passionate about what they do, and they really want to see every student who comes in lead better than when they came in.
It's given me the chance to really become the person that I am today.
Students come to SUNY Ulster motivated to find their career path and leave fully prepared to enter the job market or transfer to a four-year institution to continue the studies.
Still to this day, sometimes when I hear people say, Nurse Julie, it's surreal that you finally completed your journey and I'm working. Amazing. It's an amazing feeling.
SUNY Ulster faculty have pivoted from in-person classes to face-to-face, remote, fully online, and high-flex course options. In the high-flex modalities, students have the option to attend class in-person or participate synchronously via Zoom. Classes may be divided into groups based on enrollment.
We want to get started because we have a very, very active and rich time together this morning.
Our enrollment and success team is here to help you accomplish your goals. Whether you're graduating high school or are an adult learner, SUNY Ulster provides a great education in both quality and value, with learning options that fit your life and goals.
I like to do all the courses online because that's what fits into my schedule the best. I work full-time, I have a family, so if it wasn't for the flexibility, I don't think I'd be able to return to school.
The Ulster Community College Foundation awards $500,000 in scholarships annually. 70% of SUNY Ulster students graduate with no debt.
It's like due to those scholarships that I was able to make a difference.
Like 2 years at Ulster were completely debt-free.
The new Start for Women program, powered by Darlene L. Pfeiffer, helps women in Kingston and Ulster County earn a one-year SUNY Ulster business certificate leading to living wage employment and economic mobility. The Novo Foundation undertakes these efforts with humility and transparency.
Of all the things we've done, the thing that's been most successful and I'm most proud of is the President's Challenge Scholarship.
President's Challenge Scholarship has almost 200 students in the program this fall, 2021. This program assists Ulster County first-generation students with overcoming socioeconomic barriers associated with attending college. Two-year full tuition scholarships are awarded to eighth graders.
It's always been a dream for me to go to college on a scholarship.
This is really what I changed my life.
This will help so much in my future, and thank you so, so much.
Some make changes that spread across the globe and alter the course of history. Some may only change in one single life. A change in thinking, a change in direction, a change in what is and what can be. An opportunity to be valued, to be understood, to be important, to make a difference, to grow, to succeed.
Today is a celebration of our accomplishments. One chapter is coming to an end, and a new one is soon beginning. The future belongs to us.
What's interesting is that young lady you heard speaking, the chancellor called and said, would you make a short video that we'd like to show to all the students? And she did that in 10 minutes. Put that video together, she sent it to us, and we have to use it, which is brilliant. She's graduating, and she's got a full scholarship to go on to. I think it's an impulse. What I want to do is just cover some things that's on the video that you may question. You know, we are number one in the state. You know, that's your community college. Congratulations. And I'm so proud to be part of something that really we were able to change so much. Why are we the number one? Well, there's six reasons. First is that affordability. There's a metrics that is designed by these evaluation companies, and they look at these things. Affordability. You wouldn't think, you look at our tuition, we're probably one-third of the bottom as far as what it goes. But you take $500,000 and you give them in scholarships, it drives us to about the most reasonably in the state. And you're going to see in the minutes, almost in the nation. The next is, you know, how many federal loans do your students take out? Well, they take out almost none. We can provide all the scholarships they need. So another check mark for us. Loan debt. How many of your students default on their loans? Well, it's pretty close to zero. Then the next one is online courses. And I don't mean what we turned around and went online. I'm talking about two courses that have been online for about 5 years. They're ranked in the top 10 in the country. We have a computer science program. Affordable, easy, and everything you need to do is online, and it's ranked one of the top in the country. Our business program, same thing, about 4 years it's been in progress. It's ranked one of the best in the country. And I'll get into enrollment and retention and six-year graduation rates, but I'll give you more detail on that in a minute. Now, our mission, you know, sometimes it's not like I want to correct people, but I want to reassure or reinforce the fact when, you know, you hear people in the community say, well, you need to have a technical school. You need vocational programs. Well, 50% of what we do is technical and vocational. We do talk about a VET tech program. You have your police science, which is a 3-month program. You get licensed. You have your fashion design, a 2-year program. Go right into business. Our business programs, those are 2-year programs that are designed for career readiness. Then you look at what we're doing in the continuing ed, and I'll show you some of those. We do everything except plumbing. That's the only thing I can say we really don't. And BOCES does do that. And we work very closely with BOCES. We have an electrical program that their students can transfer into some of our green collar programs in electric. But it's important that we stress that. You know, we do that, and if there's a need, we can turn around in weeks and start the program at virtually anything. And I mentioned earlier that we are in the top 100 as far as affordability. Now, that's 1,400 schools, and we're the only one on the list that's in New York State. Now, we do have challenges, and I think the challenges are going to continue over the years. And I'll let me cover you what I believe we have to face. Right there is a Times Union article, and it went back 10 years on the enrollment of community colleges. And you'll see that one chart, that's the 30 community colleges. In 10 years, some of our colleagues have lost up to 45% of their enrollment. You think about how you keep the doors open when you lose 45%. Just think about your own personal household if you lost that kind of income. Here's one list that I'm glad we're not at the top. We're second from the bottom. We lost 4% in 10 years. But what we're really proud about is if you look back 5 years, we've actually grown. 1 in 2 schools out of the 30 that actually had growth in enrollment. So we were able to do something that was unique and different, and I'll show you some of those reasons why. But I have to tell you, this pandemic has changed this for all of us. So we don't know where we're going to land at the end of this. It doesn't mean when we're giving up. It just means we're going to have to be creative and pull out some of the same old tricks that we did before. You know, some people say, well, you lost a lot of enrollment. Well, quite frankly, if you look at our headcount, we didn't lose that many headcounts. What we lost is students taking more courses. So we used to have like 60% of our students would be full-time. That counts for a lot of FTE. Now you take that 60% and say, oh, they're only gonna take one course this semester because they don't work. Because X, Y, Z, thousands of reasons. But that's our challenge, retention, and bringing these students back to full-time is what our real challenge is gonna be. We were very fortunate, and Jamie's gonna cover this, but we received three fortunate pots of money. First one was the beginning of the summer when we were looking at 20% cuts from the state. They stepped in, and that CARES 1 was truly remarkable because a lot of our colleagues, just for an example, SUNY Adirondack, they laid off 128 people, and they're not too much different in size than us. But we were fortunate over the years, you know, we've really been able to do well with our finances, and we're over a $3.5 million in fund reserve. So we weren't worried. We were just gonna be able to use some of that to keep the people we needed in place. Second one came in just about January, and again, another one that gave, you know, a good boost to the students as well as us. And we were able to put it into lost revenue, which was heaven sent, because our revenue had dropped with the enrollment. And the third one, and I don't want to take Jamie's thunder, but she'll talk more about these. Third one is what we're working on right now, but it's $2 million. So we're going to be able to revamp things in our community here that we've never thought we would be able to do. So we're going to be able to be working on that right now. What do we do that's different, that, you know, we're kind of unique? Well, things like the Green Career Academy. Not many schools can turn around something. And I remember talking to Pat, he was just elected. He said, you know what we got to do? We got to get together and start this Green Academy. That's the future of the new Green Deal. But within 2 or 3 weeks, we had the program up and running. Unfortunately, you know, we got hit by the pandemic, but we still ran the classes and we're still running, and we're still going to have that program's going to be bigger and better in the future. I got a quick advertisement that we use, I'll show you. It's nice that there's so many employers in the community that actually cover the tuition costs for the students. So virtually it was a free program for people who were interested. And we're looking forward to more of that. SBDC, I want to make sure that everyone knows we support the SB, it's ours. We support seven counties, but the funds to support and pay the individuals come out of our budget. And we do that because it's an economic driver. And there was no better time to prove our point is during a pandemic. When, think about the businesses that they helped. They helped over 150. They started 120 new businesses during this whole time. And again, that's something that we have, you know, we just don't talk enough about. But we support that. You know, it's a federal grant, but the individual who runs in and writes a grant all comes out of our salary, they're our employee. We went out to the prison. We still, to this day, we have 127 students that are taking programs. And occasionally I'll get, you know, some feedback saying, you know, our money shouldn't go to pay, you know, the tuition for these students, these, you know, prisoners. Fact is, it doesn't cost the state anything. Actually, there's a very wealthy individual in New York City that pays all the tuition and covers at no expense. So it works out for us, works out for this. And actually, there's some of, you know, meanest characters you ever want to know, but they're darn good students. The first teaching I ever did was in Florida and a maximum president. So it's amazing how the attendance is. It's 100% every time. So we've done real well with that. You know, and if you look at, if somebody gets some kind of training while they're in prison, what's the likelihood that they'll return? About 5%. Somebody who doesn't get any type of training, it's 85%. You know, you can think about it, it's well worth the investment. And we're not investing. You know, all we're doing is we're taking advantage of a donor who sees the value of it. And again, there's another huge thank you. You know, you guys have been super. And just some photographs of some of the work that we've done. That's, if you look over to the left, that's the bridge that was replaced, which was falling down in pretty bad shape. All new windows, we've got new roofing, we have Jamie will go into more of it. It's amazing. And what we're most proud of is, yes, we finally have water. So feel free to have a glass of water tonight, because it's safe, it's good. I couldn't have said that last year, but now it's here. And I guess what's unique is it only took 16 years to do it, so it was a fast project. $33 million in capital projects that we've started back in 2015. Slowly picking away at it. Now, half of that comes from the legislature, the other half comes from suing. And no one has stopped the vote on it, and it's been great. You know, we literally will have an entire, you know, rebuilt campus, which we're very proud of. Some pictures of the lot water line. Unique with the water line, it actually took 2 months less than they projected because there was nobody on the roads. So there was another savings, I think it was $300,000-$400,000 savings if they were ever able to do it quickly. And those are the individuals who, every time it got stopped cold, one of those individuals stepped up and said, hey, I know so-and-so, let me go talk to him. And everybody played a role. It's incredible what we were able to do with this group. And if you know any of them, it's got to thank them. It's really, really. So we brought them up and took a picture in front of the new water team. And probably the thing that just scares me, how generous this community is. It's just unbelievable. We had an event for the President's Challenge Scholarship about 2 weeks ago, and we invited some guests, thanks to Tim and Laurel Sweeney. We raised $360,000 in 2 hours. The people in the community just are so supportive, and they really want to make a difference. You know, $500,000 in scholarships, that's for the school our size, that's unheard of. And the thing that, you know, that makes me sleep better at night is the President's Challenge Scholarship. Started it 5.5 years ago. And what was just there, that's 150 students that were on our steps here just before the pandemic hit. And this, you know, and I like to show this actually are the faces of those kids that are in eighth grade that took the challenge. Those were the first six. Then we brought 16 in. Then next year we brought 50 in. Then the next year we brought 50 more in. This year we have 200 in the program right now. And every one of those faces, somebody, your neighbor, your friends, wrote a check for $8,000 to help them, to get them through this program. And we have a short video to tell you what the program is all about and how we started.
Emotional, satisfying days, I think, in 40 years of education I ever had. To watch the joy from the moms.
I'm so happy for my daughter. I'm proud of her. She's ambitious and she's self-disciplined.
I am so very proud of her. She always amazes me. So happy. And I am so thankful to everyone for choosing her. I thank you very much for this opportunity, and she's going to do wonderful things, I know it.
Literally, that day, I left knowing that we changed his lives. Hearing their story is just remarkable.
College is expensive these days, so I didn't think I could go very far, but when, you know, I had not only my family and my friends telling me they believed in me, but when I had someone who never even knew who I was, like, genuinely believed in me, that felt even better.
People have walked out of my life, so I'm really happy that, like, as people walk out, there's more people that walk in that believe in me.
Over the last 4.5 years, we've had a lot of success, and I think out of all the things we've it's been the most successful, and I'm most proud of, is the President's Challenge Scholarship. It's a unique program where we're going after eighth graders that will change their lives.
There are so many young adults that do not have the opportunity to receive an education. It possibly may not be talked about in their family. It could be finances. It could be many reasons. We have so many students who are living in poverty, who haven't had parents who have gone to college, but who are brilliant and capable and full of much potential.
Our students are diamonds. They're bright students, capable, and some come with extreme amount of challenges. You know, life is not fair, but they show up, you know, and they finish.
To see that people have taken the opportunity to believe in students that they have never met is not only heartwarming, but it's truly amazing. It is the golden rule personified.
We started something just wanted to target 8th graders in a 2-year scholarship. Now they come on campus, they're getting the college ID, they're attending classes, they're coming to special events. They are SUNY Ulster students in 9th grade.
It creates an accountability that a lot of kids don't have, and a sense of pride as a result of that.
You know, you can make a donation to a large organization and you know it's going to overhead and other expenses and perhaps the end result, but with this, you know, you're impacting one person's life.
The idea that you can identify a student in 8th grade and then mentor them and sort of encourage them for 4 years is also quite a gift for us to see a young person blossom.
This is what we're all about here at Community College of Student Success. This is a unique way, but I think it's a tremendous way of getting folks here that ordinarily probably wouldn't be here or had that opportunity to have. This is the greatest joy that I think one could have.
The first six that we had, we didn't know how this was going to work. Then the next year, we brought in another 16. Right now, we have 50 students going through the program. As we sit right here, they're out there awarding the next 50. So we'll have 100 for the program by the end of this month. I believe we have created a model that can be expanded. So the future is to bring in a statewide.
We are so proud of Abigail for our first scholarship class. Abigail's graduated a year early and is here attending SUNY Ulster. She's our first President's Challenge scholarship recipient here on campus, and we are just so happy to have her here.
I see students go from feeling defeated to feeling full of hope.
This will help so much in my future, and thank you so, so much.
I can't believe I'm going to go to college.
This is really going to change my life.
When I heard Christina say, this is really going to change my life, that was it. That was it for me. I was just hooked.
I knew I always wanted to go to college, I just didn't know how. When I heard about the President's Challenge Scholarship, I knew I needed to apply. I thought that would be a changing moment in my life.
For some students, it's really uplifting their entire family. Now,
lifts the student, it lifts the family, and it lifts our entire community.
I had one of the donors come up to me. She says, this is the legacy of the college. If nothing else we ever do at SUNY Ulster, I think this will be what we're known for, changing lives.
I think everyone knows Darlene Pfeiffer. About a month ago, she reached the $1 million mark. She, with all her donations, she started the New Start for Women, which got us a $1 million grant from Novo. She started the Entrepreneur Program. It's just like 100,000 here, 100,000, and finally it hit us $1 million. So we, the foundation, and our staff said, we need to bring Darlene out and thank her for all she's done. So we go to the Diamond Mills, and we're having a nice meal, and we're, you know, showering her with gratitude, and she says, stop it. And, you know, what's the matter? So she goes in the back, and she does this. She pulled out a check and gave me $1 million for the President's Challenge Scholarship Fund, which made me cry. So with that, I'm done.
All right, so I'm going to jump in with some budget updates. As Dr. Al said, you know, quick overview, no tuition increase, no increase in county share, no layoffs. This year we thought it was really important to really look at our bottom line. Again, students are coming in more stressed, more in need. It is not the time for a tuition increase by any means. We know some student campuses are going forward with tuition increases. We are not. A quick budget overview. So we started off with a budget gap of $1.3 million. Most of that was tied to the reduction in enrollment plus full staffing levels. As Dr. Al said, we did not put forward any staffing reductions as part of our budget process. We really felt it was very important for us as a campus to remain true to that. We did have an influx of federal funding, so $4.6 million in federal funding. Most of that is going to be allocated to to academic affairs for student-related services. So mental health services, classroom improvements, student-focused areas. We've been conducting town hall sessions, similar to what the county's been doing for their federal funding, and really been garnering some great support. On state aid, we did have an increase in state aid. Again, that helped us really bottom line on our budget. As Dr. pointed out, kind of the enrollment summary, we're seeing that shift from full-time to part-time. Again, not unexpected. Students are seeing more stress. They want to go back into the workforce. They need to earn money. They're coming to campus on a part-time basis. What's also important are the course modalities. So we're seeing that more students are encouraged by the online courses, and they're signing up for those. So we have about 44% that are scheduled for face-to-face. Those will have some level of a hybrid modality where students can then flex into a remote session if they need to. Again, with COVID, with quarantining, we have to be able to offer that. Quick overview of the revenues. So as you see, tuition is down. That is tied to our 9% reduction in enrollment. Our state aid has increased based on our state aid per FTE basis. And they also enacted the floor funding model. So we received 98% of our approved funding from the prior year. So that really helped us with the state aid increase. County share is flat. Other revenue is down a little bit. We do expect that we won't be able to do as many events on campus. Bookstore commission, food sale commission is down. That all hits other revenue. And the federal funding has to be reported as operating expense, tip for operating revenue, sorry. Typically that would be reported in our grants, but that's why you see the federal operating. In terms of an expense overview, we do have a slight increase in salaries and wages. As Dr. L said, we had that shift in our model for IT. We brought in some in-house staff and switched off of some of the staffing levels from contractual. That did increase our salaries a little bit. We also did have contract negotiations that came through. The county just negotiated CSEA, so that's also in there. Benefits with a slight increase, again, tied to our FTEs and our employees. We did see the reduction in contractual, again, mostly tied to the IT conversion from our contractual relationship with them. We do have an increase in equipment. Again, that's going to be tied to the CARES funding. We expect to use a lot of that funding for classroom modernizations. So as Dr. Ross said, the federal funding was a huge help to us. So CARES Round 1 had to be targeted only for COVID-related expenses, so testing, PPE, any of those types of things. Round 2 and Round 3 have been extended a little bit, so we can include lost revenue in that. That's very important for our campus, because we can now use that revenue source to tie it to our lost revenue. And Round 3, we're expecting it to mirror Round 2 funding, which also includes some low-level tech upgrades, classroom upgrades, some modernizations on campus. This is what's really exciting. Never before have we seen this level of federal funding support directly to students. So these are dollars that will go directly in the hands of students as they enroll here at SUNY Ulster. So Round 1, our team has allocated over $762,000 directly to students. Round 2 is another $762,000, and Round 3 will be almost $2.6 million allocated directly to students. And I'm just going to go back to one thing quick. That can be for any component of a student's cost of attendance. So that can cover books, tuition, fees, any cost of a student coming to college here. Again, we're never going to see that again, and it's so exciting for our students. Several budget initiatives. So again, classroom modernizations. We need to make our classrooms equipped for that hybrid flex model so that our students can be in person and also virtual at the same time. We are also doing some initiatives to increase enrollment. We're focusing on an RN to BS program with nursing, advanced manufacturing, a really exciting social work program, and a direct transfer program in education to SUNY New Paltz. We also have our IT infrastructure, and we're working with our IT department to really improve our infrastructure and our IT securities. We also have a new diversity, equity, and inclusion department. Again, we felt that as a campus, this is very important, and we need to take a step forward and form an actual department for that, which is going to be focused on all those new initiatives. So some of the academic initiatives. We have a new, well, an enhanced RN to BS program with SUNY Empire. So we'll have a SUNY Empire person on campus here, helping our students enroll directly from here to SUNY Empire for nursing. Advanced manufacturing program. Again, this is to meet the needs of our community. We've heard time and time again that we need advanced manufacturing, people coming out with degrees and with micro-credentials to do that. Our advanced manufacturing program will meet the needs of our community. And in education, we'll have a direct transfer program to SUNY New Paltz. So students can start here in education and then transfer directly into New Paltz. Cybersecurity has been on everyone's mind this year. We are enhancing our cybersecurity initiatives here by joining the SUNY Operations Center called SUNY SOC, and we'll be enhancing with the following action plan. So we'll be doing joining the SUNY SOC, and then we're going to be doing gap analysis and penetration testing. So this is really looking at our gaps on campus, what do we need to do to improve, and then we're going to do penetration testing on our staff to determine where do we have vulnerabilities, who's taking that phishing email and clicking that link. And then we'll back it up with enhanced training and user support, and then a reevaluation again to determine if we've addressed our gaps. And again, as we emerge from the pandemic, I think we're very well positioned for our students, and we're eager to get back to face-to-face courses and back to our normal college experience. Any questions? Tracy? Oh, I don't know the rules. Can I just talk?
You're free.
Thank you.
So for the recovery funds that are going direct to students, how is it determined? Are they all eligible? Do they apply directly? Do they do it through you? How do you determine?
So SUNY has put out a whole template, and all, and SUNY is going to base it on your expected family contribution, which is an indicator of wealth. But everybody on campus will receive some level of support through this, and with the CARES Round 3, we just received guidance from SUNY that they're looking for campuses to extend more money based on, you know, need, but also to get money in the hands of all students on campus. And that's handled directly from our student accounts. So our student accounts works with financial aid. Financial aid determines the student's eligibility, and then it's a straight direct check to the students.
And if I can just ask a follow-up,
sure.
Would that apply to new students as well?
Correct.
I mean, how are you getting the information out to potential students that it might be more affordable?
This is where it's
this
tricky.
One special.
Yeah, so we cannot use this for pre-marketing advertising to students. So as students inquire about enrolling, we're informing them of this. If inquiries come into our financial aid office, we're allowed to inform them of this possibility. The federal government has put a stipulation that we cannot use this as a recruitment tool. money to students.
Just want to know, please tell her.
Yes.
Yeah,
we
can tell her, but you can tell her.
Yeah.
Do they still need to make out like the FAFSA form?
Yes, so they still need to make the FAFSA. We do, on the round three, have a 20%. 20% of the student allocation funds can be targeted to students who do not fill out the FAFSA. So that's your students who would be DACA eligible or other areas who are not filling out the FAFSA form. We can target those fundings to those students.
So I'm so happy that you're doing this BS nursing. You know, we need this desperately. So two questions. One, I assume, I mean, that academically it'll all be online with Empire. Is this in association for them to have direct contact? Is there particular hospitals or medical centers that you're connecting it with?
Well, the beauty is the second. If you get a trigger degree, you need to see clinical, which is a challenge. After that's done, the second 2 years is almost, there's only one experimental group that's all in class. So basically, the second part of the nursing program is much more manageable as far as having to go to a hospital. It's really not even a relationship that we have to create with hospitals.
That's great. And then the other part was, you know, we also had a loss of LPN programs with all the BOCES that didn't offer it. So have you investigated at all in efforts to increase that?
Well, right now with the BOCES, they have a surgical tech program that they no longer afford to run. We're transmitting our program within a year. We have running centers like for example, transition line. LPN, BOCES got a huge lump sum to help them keep the LPN. So LPN will be fine because of that. But we were looking to take over the LPN, and when that money goes away, that's my goal.
Right at SurgeTech will be right at Kingston, which is right across from the Mary's App campus, so they'll be in partnership there. We also have clinicals in Ellenville and other hospitals as well for nursing programs.
And can you just explain quickly what the Adelphi, the social work connection is?
Yep, so the Adelphi will be operating on campus, offering primarily night classes for students who are enrolled at Adelphi who want to take a BS program in social work. So it'll be a good direct pathway for incoming students who are looking to get a social work degree out of Adelphi.
Not a question, but rather a comment. My son is actually dating a recipient of the Presidential Challenge Scholarship in the second year. She plans to attend this fall, and she's going to be taking the nursing program. And to say life-changing, you have no idea. This is the opportunity that this individual would never have been able to receive otherwise. So proud of her and grateful for the opportunity as well.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, continue on with the Ways and Means agenda. Resolution number 238-239. Can I have a motion to postpone that to the next meeting?
I'll move that.
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 294, creating two full-time positions with the Department of Social Services. Any motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second. Second. Discussion?
Discussion.
Just like I said last week, I'm going to be a no on this resolution, not because I don't think that perhaps we need more folks at social services, but because I'm finding way too many budget modifications done mid-year. You know, these are conversations that we need to have at budget time. We pass a budget and expect that we're going to be reasonably operating inside of the budget. And last month, we sent $500,000 annually to the district attorney's office. This month, we've got this resolution. We've got a new position in the budget department. We've got three new positions with the recovery resilience. So I just think that we're doing way too much budget work mid-budget. That's all you know.
Any other discussion? Chair
Johnson. Yeah, but point of information, they said eventually they may be coming back for us for the position. We've got them working today.
I mean, they say that they did, but that's not my recollection during budget time.
Any other discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Opposed. $299 over in 2021-22, Ulster County Community
College. I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Martell's, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 315, authorized design work for improvements to the county courthouse. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Second. Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 322, amending the 21 budget to adjust salary of the director of budget and innovation. Okay, motion.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Second discussion. Discussion.
I was going to see if Tracy had anything you wanted to say first discussion or not.
Do you want to speak first?
No, I was saying if you wanted to.
Oh.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to talk about it because I know that last week you had asked to have it postponed because there were some things you wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, last week I had asked that, and I'm grateful. Thank you for postponing both so that I could be present for the conversation, but also so that we would have the opportunity to discuss these positions in caucus. And given that we had not had a caucus meeting prior, I have several concerns about this resolution. Similar to what Legislator Ronk just said, the mid-year move with it appears to me to be a salary adjustment. I'm understanding that from the caucus discussion with Deputy Executive that the work's already being done, so it's difficult for me to find a different way to interpret it. I also have concerns about the change in title to the Director of Budget and Innovation. Currently that line, best I can tell, is the Director of Innovation. So I would like to better understand the reporting within the Department of Budget and where this falls and what this change is in relation to the change of duties within the Department of Budget. So at this moment, I'm not ready to be supportive of this. I have more information, but I'm curious to hear what the rest of the committee thinks about this.
Thanks. As I said previously with the positions in the self-services department, I think that this is a valid conversation to have about the necessity of this salary adjustment or whatever we're going to call it, because as far as I understand, the person who is likely to take this position doesn't have the Director of Innovations title right now. I believe it's the Deputy Budget Director.
That's my understanding.
This is a new position. Are we then going to hire for the Deputy Budget Director? And, there's a lot of questions I have that would be well served during the budget process. And I think that that's why these things should happen during the budget process. Same thing I said when we were discussing, the positions in the DA's office. The same thing I said when we were talking about the social services positions. I think that any of these positions that are county funded, we really need to have that discussion during the budget process because the budget's a whole document, and I feel like now we're piecemealing it mid-year.
So my concerns are a little bit different. I don't personally feel that this falls in the same category with DSS and DA because in those cases, and to quote Legislator Cahill, if we had a crystal ball at the time that we were doing the last budget, we may have made a lot of very different decisions. We thought we were going to be in worse position than we are. What I'm concerned about with this one is things that actually showed up in the budget in 2021 where job titles were changed and increased salaries were added on to that. And so I have a concern with it now, and I have a concern if this shows up in the 2022 with a job title change and an increased salary because of it. So if it does get moved over to the budget process, I still want to pay close attention to it.
No, absolutely. I totally agree, Legislator Walter, and quite frankly, that's why I think this belongs in the budget process because, we have a couple of months where we focus just on the financial plan and we can actually, have those discussions with the executive's office amongst ourselves, with all of our colleagues. That's why I'd like to see it happen. If it's going to happen, I'd like to see it happen in the budget process because we can have a more far-reaching conversation about it. And it's also the Director of Budget and Innovation, so it's a really good time to have that conversation.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
wholly against a postponement, but I'm also not against, you know, voting on it now. I'm not sure that my mind is going to change given another month, but if there are other legislators that would like an extra month to think about it, I'm open to that as well.
What does the rest of the, let me see what the rest of the committee feel?
I'm going to be a no.
I don't feel the need to postpone. I believe it'll show up again in the 2022 budget, so we'll have the chance to talk about it then.
Okay. Right, so far, Chair Donaldson is a yes. Any other yes? No? Against? Mr. Haynes and Perry?
He said against now.
Against?
You did a yes.
You're a yes or against? He's okay, so. Against.
Two in favor?
Two in favor.
Yeah,
everybody else.
Thank you.
All right, resolution 32 has been defeated. 323, supporting the recommendations of the Recovery and Resilience Working Group. Motion.
I'll second it. Discussion.
Okay, second discussion. Chair Bartels.
On this resolution, I would like to postpone, to close the postponement. I know that at least in the Democratic caucus, there's a plan to discuss this further. We began the conversation at the last committee. It's my understanding that we do not need to, we're not required to vote on. There's no requirement that we vote on this. We're not holding anything up by not voting on this. I have concerns about voting on a high-level plan and then being called to account later as if I approved all the details of this plan. I'd like to have further conversation with my legislative colleagues, both in caucus and in this committee and outside of this committee, to really get into the details of how the legislature would like to see these funds expended. I do think that there are policy decisions, and we just received this, so I'm not prepared to vote on this.
So you're just making an actual motion to postpone, or?
I can't. Yeah, I'll make a motion to postpone.
And second.
I'll second it.
Discussion.
I'll say that, you know, unlike a couple of other similar types of plans like this that have come before us, I think the thing that also makes me particularly uncomfortable was the dollar amounts allotted. Like, if it was more of a conceptual plan, like here are the areas that we care about, I think I could feel a little bit more comfortable that we're not committing to something, but when I saw amounts there, it made me feel like wondering where those amounts came from. Is there some lack of transparency that would lead to those specific amounts? And I may feel very different if those amounts weren't actually in there, but at this point, with those amounts in there, it makes me very uncomfortable, so I would definitely second.
Technically, it's a general plan, and as a result, there will be many more bites at the apple. And whenever anything that's going to be implemented comes up, we're going to be voting on for each and every one of them. So the idea of putting a general plan out makes sense. I think it makes sense to the public that they should let them know that we are doing something, we are moving forward. Holding it up or postponing it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me at this point, because we are going to get many more bites at the apple. So, I mean, the idea, and it is a generalized plan, and so you have the ability, and we have the ability to change it, if we wish, as time goes on. I mean, I think we have a generalized idea of which housing, mental health, and so on and so forth, that was put in this plan.
And I think we need to start working as a team. Right. Let's
see, Perry first. I just think this is far too important to our community to be voting on it like this. I mean, I'm either going to vote no or vote to postpone it, but it's just far too important.
Thanks. And I would like to add that I'm not necessarily fully supportive that the headings are exactly the headings that we should be focusing on. And you know, when you look at the guidance of the federal funding and they talk about areas that were particularly hit by COVID, I find that like a structural inequality and racial inequality, which was a huge problem beforehand and became
our team or the execs, but does this preclude us if we postpone this again? Does anything, by doing that, do we stop ourselves and delay ourselves from doing any of the projects that we feel worthwhile?
Every project has to go before the legislature.
So the answer is that if we postpone, we do not inherently delay everything from moving forward.
Well, let me put it like this. This plan was put together following the subsequent meetings that included the legislative leadership, the working group that came up with these buckets. Their aspirational goals to help set priorities. We already have asks from the municipalities, legislators that far exceed the amount that are allocated to spend. Ultimately, we're going to have to figure out and prioritize which projects to move forward from those asks and others that worthwhile. So, in terms of if we don't have an aspirational goal, if we don't set a target, whether it delays it because we're going to be having 23 people arguing over one or two projects here or there, I can't really say. We're not looking at this as one project at a time. We have to have a time limit to spend the funds. The pandemic ended a few months ago. Not ended, but recovery started a few months ago. Other jurisdictions are spending their recovery funds. We're trying to start the recovery here too. So any option that doesn't actually include some aspirational goals, some ability to set some targets at least, prioritize projects that have to come forward to you, the legislature, does have the potential
for that. I'm just trying to clarify, though, Ian, because this is the rumor that's going around out there, and I want to make sure that it's very well understood that the formality of approving this resolution tonight, if we do not do that, that doesn't stop us from prioritizing the projects, from deciding what we want to do and when and how. We can still do all that, even if we do not actually vote on this tonight.
If I may, John. No. Postponing the plan tonight does not stop progress.
Thank you.
However, two things that are required. I hope that we can very quickly get from, I have some vague discomforts that I want to work through to real substantive conversation, because we do need to start moving on this. The thing that will stop progress is the next resolution. It's whether or not we can start bringing people to work on this or not. And, happy to have substantive conversation about the details of the plan. I have made my best faith effort to incorporate all the legislative input that I've received. If there's more legislative input, I'd like to have those conversations. But I have to have a team in place to start working on the budgets and the contracts and the procurement processes. This is going to have a lot of moving pieces, and that's where we really need the progress.
I'll be very, very brief and say that, oddly enough, I'm in agreement with both Dave and Eve on this in different ways. I don't have a problem with postponing. I came here tonight prepared to vote for it because it is aspirational for the most part. And one of the things that I've been pushing for, as we move forward in this process is not to spend the money that we're receiving on things that the federal government or the state government is going to offer money for. There's a lot of moving pieces there. We don't know, what kind of an infrastructure bill gets passed. So maybe infrastructure takes a back seat from our funding. Like I said, it's aspirational, and we can pass all of the projects without adopting the plan or with adopting the plan. So I came prepared to vote for it. I'm okay with the postponement for the same reasons that we don't need the plan to start moving forward.
Any other discussion on the postpone? All those in favor?
Postpone.
You're Perry. You're no for postpone, Mr. Perry?
No.
Okay. Anybody opposed for postpone?
You're opposed for postpone. Well, I'm afraid of failing the postponement and then failing, so I know we changed the
postponement passed.
It passed. Okay. Well, with me being announced.
Yes.
Thank you. 324, amending the 21 budget for additional positions for American Recovery. No motion?
Oh,
I'll move it for discussion.
Thank you.
Second. Discussion.
I mean, I have some concerns about the dollar amounts in here. You know, I came prepared to discuss that. I, from what I understood, there was a discussion, there were discussions about possibly postponing this a month as well. I have a deep concern about putting somebody, and I shared this from the very beginning, even when I was on the working group, I have a deep concern about putting somebody in the finance office that makes more than the commissioner of finance. It's A, disrespectful, and B, is disingenuous, because if you've got somebody who's making $20,000 more than the commissioner of finance, that person is obviously not reporting to the commissioner of finance. So, I mean, you know, unless we're gonna raise Bert's salary to be more than 126,000, then I can't support a position in Bert's office that makes more than the commissioner of finance. I think that, you know, there are comparable salaries and for what I believe are comparable job duties in the county that we could work on and look at, but I'm not sure where the rest of the committee sits. That's where I'm at.
For similar reasons, I'll put in a motion to postpone it. I think there's a few things. One are there people who could be doing the types of work, and how are we looking at what our current staffing is in order to do this kind of work, because many of it is just an extension of the work we're already doing. Also, I just feel like I would feel much more comfortable thinking about how to administrate this if once we have a clear sense of what the specific resolutions are and how we're prioritizing them, or initiatives are and how we're prioritizing them. For example, if, and I said this in our caucus, if for some reason, hypothetically, all this 17 million first year went just to the Department of Public Works, that would be a very different administrative system to make sure that worked. And so I feel like until I have a better sense, which I know in the Democratic caucus and I'm sure in the Republican caucus, we're really good at getting down to very, you know, brass tacks and very specific initiatives that we prioritize, then I feel much more comfortable. You know, I don't have a general problem with administrative costs. I recognize there will be, but I just feel like, how can we determine those until we're really clear where this money is going? And so I would be very much favorable to postpone.
Chair Donaldson. Administrative apparatus that we're going to interface with. So I actually think it's pretty important. I don't
don't see a scenario where this doesn't move forward. And unlike a plan that's roughed out, that could be roughed out now or roughed out a month from now, this is the type of work that I think we will see constituents that are worse off for having delayed this.
Thanks. And just to Legislator Uchitel's point, I've heard that line actually before from a member of the executive staff when talking about my concerns about this. It wasn't about a software engineer, it was about psychiatrists in the Department of Health who make more than Dr. Smith. But we're not talking here about the difference between a software engineer and the CEO of a company or the CFO of a company, or we're not talking about the difference between Dr. Smith or a psychiatrist. You're not going to get a psychiatrist for less than a certain amount of money. And again, maybe there's something I'm unaware of about this position, that they're looking for a special set of skills or a special set of certifications that demand a certain salary. But I mean, it seems to me like we're hiring a financial person to go to the finance department to administer grant funding, and we're putting them underneath the financial person in the finance department who manages the budget and the day-to-day folks at the county. So I don't think that you're talking about hugely different skill sets that you're looking for, unless I'm not being told what they are looking for in skill sets and certifications that demand $20,000 higher salary than the person who is above them in the office. So I respectfully disagree. I agree with your sentiment, and I disagree with it being applied to this particular position.
Let's see if Bartels
then. Yeah, I just want to say, I mean, I agree with Legislator Ross's point on salary. I mean, I think it's a point well taken from Legislator Uchitel, but I agree, given the description of the job and the fact that it's to live in the Department of Budget, and it goes back to my earlier comment regarding budget and innovation. I mean, I really need to see a flow chart of operations and budget, but I would have a very hard time supporting a salary within the Department of Budget with this job description that exceeded the Director of Budget salary. That's the first. I also agree with Legislator Walter. I mean, I find the 5% to be, I want to say random. I mean, a number chosen that is a percentage of the whole. The whole is very vague, and setting up sort of the administrative overhead, I too would feel much more comfortable if we knew what projects we were moving forward with and what overhead was required. I could see potentially one person as that, but three, the amount of people to fill the 5% to me is a problem. So I do not feel comfortable with this amount of overhead at this time.
All right, I'll say Walter, then Chair Donaldson, but keep in mind, this is a motion on the floor to postpone, so if it's not related, let's try to make it short.
Yeah, we could, I mean,
yeah, it's related, though, because it's a part of what we would need for the next time if we're to vote on it, because it's postponed. So I have two things. One is the fact that I absolutely agree that we have to get started and that the work has to start. But I don't necessarily agree that it's outside of us. We are the legislature. We are the policymakers. So we should start this work. And it doesn't. I don't think the work gets halted because we don't approve this. I think that we should start this work of identifying the initiatives and prioritizing them. And we can do that without those positions, because that's what we were elected to do. The other part is, for the postponement, what I would also like to be able to get from the executive's office, if it's okay, is just clarification if it passes. From my understanding, usually with federal funding, indirect has to be
spending this money in the best way possible, putting all the people together, the communities, the legislature, you've got the town supervisor, the town, all the town boards, all these people are all interacting with this information. Not only are they doing that, but then they also have to react with other monies that are coming in. There may be an infrastructure bill coming in. All these things are coming at us, and we need to have a team together and start moving on it. We can postpone again. That's what we'd like to do. But there's 23 of us, one county executive. One of the reasons why I promoted that point is for moving to a county executive. Part of government. When I was the chairman the last time, when I was the chief executive officer, it was absurd. We were running, I was running a $300 million budget on a part-time basis as a full-time teacher. I was the CEO technically, and I'm done through the committee system. Everything. I'm not ready to go back to that at this point. This is a plan, this is a team that we are going to be part of. And I think the good part about that is, as Legislator Ruchetel pointed out, that is going to give us where we're going to get the best input for what we want to be accomplished. Because then we're going to have the team that we know we're going to be, that's the ones that are going to be answerable to us, they're the ones that are going to be coordinating with us, and it makes sense. Let's move forward on this. Let's move forward. And it wasn't just the grant of 5%, oh, let's take 5%. That's not the way it operates. But not the way it was operating. It was operating with the idea was what's the best way to at least that amount of money to move forward on this and get this thing going. Maybe we may need to add more for the administration and stuff. If that's the case, I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm willing to look at whatever we need to do and I'd like to move forward.
Yeah, I might have missed it, but is there a time frame on these positions? I'm assuming they're temp positions. And so what is the actual time frame that we're talking about? Are we talking a year, 2 years, 3 years? I mean,
the duration of the funding, so it's till the end of 2024.
Okay. Any other questions?
You know, almost by definition, procrastinating means putting off until you're absolutely sure. And if you put off until you're absolutely sure, you never get anything done. So I do think it's time to move forward.
Just to answer a couple of questions that have been raised, no, for sure the existing staff cannot stretch their time to do all this work. We definitely need to add, and I'm happy to talk about the duties of these positions, answer any specific questions about that. I will double check with the Commissioner of Finance, but given that he's the one who set up the structure and scrutinized the federal rules, I feel confident in saying that yes, this is an allowable expense under the federal rules.
So,
just to be great to have a conversation.
All right, all those in favor of postponement? Opposed?
Postponement fails.
Yeah, postponement fails.
All right, what happened?
Postponement fail. On the resolution itself, all those in favor?
Do we want to talk about amending the amounts, or do we want to? I'm not supportive of this resolution at the current salaries. I'm not even against the three positions, but the current salaries are troublesome to me, especially with the fact that on paper, even the village idiot reads it as a fourth deputy county executive. So I have a concern about that kind of a thing happening where we're essentially creating a deputy county executive position as Department of Finance over, underneath the Commissioner of Finance. So.
Other discussion? All those in favor of 324?
So, Legislator Ronk, you're saying you're not supportive of the salary, but is there
my suggestion is somewhere comparable to the Deputy Director of Planning, which I believe that from my knowledge on
what this position is going to be doing. It's in that realm of responsibilities. It's a lot of reporting work. It's a lot of, you know, traffic control, you know, project management. To me, that's an area, I believe it's in the 90-something thousand-dollar range. Do you remember?
We could double-check.
I think it's important for the entire body to vote on this resolution. I think the entire body should adequately hear that. Let them vote. Because I have a feeling, they might want to weigh in on that directly.
Say it right now.
I'm confused by Legislator Donald Paulson's comment. Are you asking?
His comment is encouraging us to support it out of committee so the entire body can vote on it.
But not speaking to your last.
I don't believe so. I mean, we can't technically amend the resolution in this committee without also amending it on the floor, but I'm not supporting it unless this committee votes to amend the salaries.
Yeah, if I can. I mean, this is some of my concern about this. I mean, you know, just adding the salaries together, you know, you're looking at, without benefits, $262,813 a year times four, you know, you're over $1 million, probably $1.4 million. And we're now talking about changes in salary and and duties and reporting in budget and sunsets. I'm also not prepared to move forward with this at this time, which is why I was asking for the postponement. But since the postponement failed, I'll be prepared to vote.
Wait, isn't it only 4% or 10%?
It's 10% of the first year.
Right, but then there's so far.
The Deputy Director of Planning makes $95,000.
Again, I have a lot of trouble approving something that's not what we're all happy with, which is, again, why the postponement seemed to make sense, so that we can at least clean this up and then have something in front of us that we can all feel good about.
Other discussion? All right, so you're voting yes, then. Resolution 324 as it's currently stated. Those who are against. Deputy Second.
If I may just clarify one more point.
Can't hear you.
Just to clarify one point. This is a position that will sunset. The salary goes away after 4 years. Every other position, Burt's, every other deputy department director will still depend on that salary. This is a salary that is going to disappear in 4 years.
Three salaries.
Yes. I don't want to steal thunder. Legislator Tavares just brought up a good point to me. It's not a hard sunset. It sunsets unless other sources of funding are found. So it's not a hard sunset. But secondary to that, so to the county executive's office. What is the mindset? I mean, we talk about it sunsets and the rest of the positions don't, and that's all well and good. They all serve at the pleasure of the county executives. They can be gone tomorrow anyway. But let's set that aside. What's the reasoning behind putting somebody at a deputy county executive salary in the Department of Finance?
If I may, Legislator Ron, with respect, I think it was your request that these positions be housed in finance, and we agreed that because of the strong tie to the financial system and the reporting and so on, that it made sense for them to be housed there.
Okay.
I think it's entirely, you know, there's a lot of choices we could have made. Clearly, the county executive wants the person who's leading this to report directly to him and be, you know, part of the extended team of folks in various departments that work very closely with the county executive's office. That's several of our department heads, including the Commissioner of Finance, do. So, you know, but obviously we didn't want to create three new positions inside the executive's office. We didn't think you all would feel that great about that approach either.
So
I think finance makes sense as a natural home for them.
So that brings up a couple of questions. Number one, so the positions are in finance, but these positions are not going to be reporting to the finance director.
I think the finance director reports directly to the county executive and meets with him routinely. And I think
I'm aware of that. I've been in the legislature for much longer than you work for the county executive's office. So I'm aware of where positions report to.
I didn't mean any offense with that remark.
Well,
I was just meaning to say that the lead of these three positions would, along with the
expected that these positions be in the Department of Finance because they'd be reporting to the Department of Finance, the Commissioner of Finance, who'd be reporting to the County Executive. If the positions are going to report to the County Executive the same way that the Commissioner of Finance does, then I'd rather have the truth for the taxpayers and have the positions in the County Executive's office. And I might not have as much of a problem with a $126,000 position being in the County Executive's office as I do with it being in the Finance office. But there was a lot of misunderstanding. And as a legislator, I feel sort of like wool being pulled over my eyes a little bit here, and then having my own statements used against me saying that I wanted these positions in the Department of Finance as if somehow we had talked in the Recovery and Resilience Working Group on salary amounts, which we did not. But again, we didn't talk about the, you know, $24 million that the County Executive came to the legislature and proposed on a very nice, you know, sheet of paper for us last month before our working group actually, you know, put our report out. So, again, there's a lot of things we didn't talk about in the working group that are now, again, this goes back to the plan, which, you know, I'm sort of more on board with what Legislator Walter said, you know, the plan being, you know, aspirational, but then having people go back and say, well, you supported the plan, so obviously you have to support these resolutions. That's sort of how this feels.
Thank you. I'd also add to this point that, and this has happened quite a few times in the short time I've been a legislator, is a person gets moved to a position, so that's where the salary goes, as opposed to thinking, for that position, what is the going rate for that position? This is several times this has happened where the rate is not based on the job title, the rate is based on the person that's getting moved into that job title. I would like to see maybe how other counties are administrating. I'd like to see what the appropriate administrative salary might be, but the idea of having the rate be based on an already known person as opposed to the job itself seems as backwards. Excuse me.
Any more discussion? Try this.
But the salaries are all coming out of the funds. I mean, if you want to know how to replace this, you should probably Google that.
Well, I like to postpone it, so I would love to do that.
The salaries are all coming out of the funds, Legislator Donaldson, but that doesn't mean that you overpay a position, you know, because the money is coming out of grant money. Because all that money could go into all these projects that are being proposed.
All those in favor of 324. All those in favor of resolution 324.
I'm in favor of it.
Two.
Yeah.
Three. All those opposed. Motion defeated. 326. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $203,570 for complete building solutions. Can I motion?
I'll move both these resolutions together. 326 and 27.
Motion to block 327.
Second.
Was that
block?
Okay.
Unless you don't want to, I just.
Well,
we
I have
got
a question
block.
Just about one of them.
Let's
leave them
separate. Okay, no, we'll leave them separate. I'll move 26.
Second. Let's say we'll go second.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
I just had, I only just noticed, maybe this John or Ellen or whoever, well, this is the Department of Public Works. I just see the COVID-19 stamp on it and just wondered if this was something that they felt was FEMA reimbursable. Ultimately, because usually that's what makes the COVID-19 stamp.
Deputy Secretary Milgram or Wright?
I'm sorry.
The legislator Walter had a question about the COVID stamp on.
So for 326 for the complete building solution, was this something that you, because it had the COVID-19 stamp, that you're thinking might be ultimately reimbursable?
I don't have the granular detail on that.
Okay. I mean, I'm just
noticing
that one.
Thing.
Well, it is related to COVID testing site, I assume, so we don't know. Okay. That was, I mean, it doesn't change my mind. I was just, since we're not going to see that money for 3 or 4 years.
All right. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?